This episode of Road Dirt the Podcast is brought to you by Law Tigers Motorcycle Lawyers. You can find them at lawtigers.com. Welcome to Road Dirt, the podcast of Road Dirt Motorcycle Media and RoadDirt.tv, your down-home grassroots motorcycle brand, covering what we like to call ride life. This is Rob Brooks, your host. Thanks for tuning in. And on this episode, our friend Neil Bailey of Neil Bailey Rides is back in Ukraine, and he's been touring the country for the past couple of weeks. I think he's going to be there through the balance of September, maybe early October. So we set up a chance to talk a day or two ago, and just to kind of hear some of his progress, some of his experiences, the people he's met along the way, the things he's seen this year, and what's changed since he was there last year and wrote that three-part story for us, An Englishman in Ukraine, which we published across the fall of last year. So we join a conversation with Neil. Well, Neil Bailey, my friend, how in the world are you?
I'm doing well, Rob. How are you? Are you in sunny Georgia?
It's not too sunny here right now. We've had storm clouds for the last few days, but it's a temperature wise, it's a little bit better than the triple digits we had for a few days in a row. It got pretty ridiculously hot here. So how's things?
I am in city of Odessa on the Black Sea.
Okay.
And it's been hitting 99 during the day.
Gosh.
So it's been pretty hot here too, which is
feels like North Georgia.
Yeah.
So let's see, if it's 9 a.m. or so our time back here in the Eastern Seaboard, Eastern Standard Time, in Odessa, Ukraine, it's a little after 4.
Just after 4, yes, afternoon. So I'm actually, you can see my bike behind me. I'm in a courtyard. I'm staying at the Kuprin Hotel. We stayed here last year, and it's a little gated area, and it's all like apartment blocks around me. So I thought it would be a little bit more interesting to look at in the background than my ugly mug in a hotel room.
Yeah, or my ugly mug over here in Georgia. So now, what have you been out doing? You told me before we started that you've been out on a humanitarian project today. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, starting today was really interesting. I met yesterday with a gentleman and his wife in the Rotary Club here in Ukraine. I've got a project with Rotary Club of Marion to find distribution for $60,000 worth of wheelchairs. And also there's a very, very big meal program going on from the United States to Ukraine. They've sent 200,000 meals, or the ability to create 200,000 meals.
Right.
So I want to find out more about the program, because I guess Rotary America's goal is to do a million meals, and they're not actually producing meals at the moment, but I will go and meet with the people. I think what they're going to do is buy local produce. They're going to put the meal packs together in Dnipro City, which is probably about 4 or 5 hours from here, and then they will distribute them to people in the occupied territories that have been liberated or are living, have come out of occupation or shelling and don't have food. So that's been kind of a big project. So quite by chance, the gentleman, Mikhailo, yesterday said, hey, we're working with some people. They're doing some humanitarian work. Would you like to go with them? And what they deal with is IDPs, internally displaced persons, which is very interesting because a number of them are themselves internally displaced persons. But what they were doing today was we were about 100 clicks outside of Odessa, really close to the Moldovan border in the farming rural communities.
Okay.
And there are people called Roma people, I guess it's R-O-M-A.
Yeah.
And there's some type of, I guess, gypsies, we would think. They're amalgamation, perhaps, of people from Romania, Moldova, Georgia. And they've settled in this part of Ukraine. So they live a little bit outside of the,
outside of kind of this mainstream culture or something.
Yeah, sorry, I heard a loud bang. It was not what I thought it was. So I don't know, maybe that's missile defense. I can hear a really loud thumping.
Wow.
So anyway, these Roma people live, they're farmers and, oh, this is kind of interesting. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's anti-missile defense going off.
Gosh, man, that's a strange foreign thing to so many of us, you know, that you're actually in one of the most beautiful cities in that part of Europe, and yet we're on a conversation and you can hear missile defense systems going off and warnings and things. It's just unless you're there, people over here on our side of the pond can't get our heads around that. That's really something.
Yeah. It's a strange thing. Yesterday I was coming into Odessa and I'd stopped at this monument and there wasn't quite as deep sounding. It sounded bigger than machine guns, but smaller than what I'm listening to right now. And they were obviously shooting at something coming up an estuary. And then about 5 minutes later, I saw black clouds of smoke on the horizon. So I assume they hit it. So yeah, I mean, it's fairly active. I mean, this is where the grain's coming out of, this is where the storage is.
Right.
I mean, I was staying down in Yuzhny and yeah, can you hear that going?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, we must. I didn't check my phone. Yeah, this guy's looking at the window. We must have some incoming. So anyway, we went out to these Roma people today, and there's this little lady in the house, and I will share some photos with you later. She has got 13 children.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's just unbelievable. And the house is, you know, obviously some mud floors, and it's very poor, but it's incredibly clean and organized, and the kids are also well behaved, and clean hair and clean clothes, and. And the people I was with are giving aids to the Roma people as well as the IDPs. And it just blows me away that these people themselves are displaced from war. They lived under occupation. They've lived under shelling and bombing. Yet they're still working to raise money and support marginalized people inside their own society as well as the IDPs. And
yeah,
it was just an amazing day out. And then the kids all danced for us. So it just was, you know, that was today. Now I'm back. Obviously, I had an appointment to talk with you and chat about the trip. And then tonight, I'm going to go to dinner with my friend Yuri. He's the used to put on an enduro here in Odessa called Iron Miraculous.
I think you posted a few pictures of him on social. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some pretty heavy duty stuff going on. So Yuri's coming into town tonight, and he's done an amazing work since we've been here. He's been building and supplying and camouflaging motorcycles for the front line, running supplies. So anyone who's been following him on social media over the last year, and they've seen Yuri pop up on my feed, you know, he's always off to the front lines with water or supplies or food or dirt bikes. And for a while at the beginning of the war, they were taking GS BMWs and putting a drive shaft off the back axle to a sidecar wheel and mounting machine gun back. So it was a two-wheel drive.
On a BMW 1250 GS.
Yeah, so
get around that.
Yeah, so, but
hey, you know, necessity is a mother of invention, right?
But it's always the same incredible story when you spend time with a Ukrainian person. And this trip has been very different because I'm traveling alone.
Yeah.
And you know, last year with Kieran, we were very much not, we had a fixer, we were in our bubble. Country was a lot more tense last year. I mean, they've had a year to kind of accept the new normal, and life is definitely moving on. But this year, being alone, obviously, it's a lot more stimulus coming in, and people are taking a lot more time to tell me their stories. And I'm just hearing incredible stories every day, you know, escaping occupation, you know, how they got out, how to, you know, what it was like the first day when missiles started coming in and stuff started exploding, who they've lost, what they've lost, and now what they're doing to rebuild. You know, what everybody's got a story about how they're helping, how they're supporting, how they're volunteering. And it really just is quite amazing when you're traveling with these people and themselves, you know, until they displaced people, their houses are blown up, they fled with nothing, and here they are in Odessa, working to help marginalized people and other internally displaced people. So it's very, very impressive. So the young lady I was with today, I want to go back tomorrow and really get her story. It was particularly interesting for me because she spent 7 months under Russian occupation.
Wow.
Inside Kherson. And when she escaped, and she finally got out, they had to just camp out in the field 5 days before the Russians would let them out. Hmm. So it's just, you know, every person just has an incredible story.
What's amazing to me too is that, you know, I mean, we all know from history, and you've seen it up on, you know, last year, is that war brings out the absolute worst in humanity. Yeah. And, but it also brings out the best in people, you know, courage, yeah, and self-sacrifice, yeah, and camaraderie and community and love and compassion. It's, you know, and it's great to see those things, you know, as people just band together and start taking care of each other, even though they're all displaced together, you know?
Yeah. I was out with Mykola and Olga last night, you know, and, you know, really beautiful lady, and they're Rotarians, and they obviously, what they were in Crimea when Crimea was annexed, and they lived nearly a year in the Russian occupation, but they were pro-Ukrainian, so it was very, very tense for them. Yeah. And they've had to leave, of course, lost their business, but their family is in Crimea, so they can't visit their family can't visit them. You know, they started a business, war broke out, they lose their business again, and they're still working for Rotary. They're still doing medical supplies. Tomorrow, if possible, I'm going to meet with a humanitarian group that goes to the front lines, and they bring back the dead bodies so that the family can have proper burials, because it's really important for Ukrainians, obviously, for anybody,
closure, yeah,
to bury their dead. And, you know, and every day I'm just sort of unearthing these humanitarian acts, and they're just, you know, they're regular people. I mean, beautifully dressed, we're sitting in a restaurant, we're having a cup of coffee and a ice cream or something, and then, you know, you start burrowing below the surface of the work that they're doing, what they've been through, what they have to live through, and again and again and again. It's just absolutely incredible.
I was going to ask you, but I think you've already answered it, just how, you know, not about so much the latest on the war. We're following that over here, you know, we see what's happening, but, you know, just a year after your last time you were there, you know, what's the overall mood and timber of the people of Ukraine that you're coming in contact with? And it seems to me your answer is that, man, they're getting on with life. They're adjusting to life under the threat of war, and they're taking care of each other, and, you know, and they're rebuilding where they can, when they can, how they can. And, you know,
100%.
And, yeah, you know, they're just banding together and taking care of each other like a true community.
Interesting talking to Mykola and Olga yesterday. You know, she said, you know, we've been suffering our whole lives. You know, I said, you know, you guys don't cry, you don't show a lot of emotion. I mean, you don't, they're not engaged in angry rants about Russians. And she said, look, we're just product of hard times. They grew up Soviets, 91, they got their independence.
That's true.
A lot of unemployment, really hard to get work, very difficult times. And, you know, here they are in the last years, you know, creating a democracy, creating this beautiful country. And now, again, they're back in full-scale invasion, full-scale war, and everything's back to, you know, some incredible uncertainty. And they've all got a fascinating way of dealing with it. They know that at any minute, I mean, I'm sitting talking to you, I mean, that's their defense is going off, the missile could any minute, you know.
Yeah.
And they live with this constant, well, the constant that they live with is this could be gone in just a minute. And they'd say, well, you know, fuck you, Putin, we're going to live our lives. And, you know, cafes are open, restaurants are open, economy is going, they've got to, everyone's got to have a job, everyone's got to move, everyone's got to live. And you got to be able to pay taxes to your government, you have to move forward. So I think, you know, kind of a little bit of a good living is the best revenge. I mean, they're really doing what they can, to keep living, but at the same time, they're all got incredible stories of what they're doing to support the war effort.
Now, have you, when you were in Lviv, did you have a chance to go by the children's hospital again yet?
Or they've got a completely new rehabilitation wing with all sorts of different ways to rehabilitate kids, to, you know, special tools to eat and cook and dress and deal with the gross and horrible injuries that they're dealing with. And what my hope is when I go back, and of course they're very, very busy, is that they showed me some horrendous pictures of a young boy that was so badly burned, they didn't think he was going to live. But what I want to do is find three children and help their families for a year, like give them a salary or give them an income. And then maybe hopefully if people want to donate, they can say, hey, you know, look what this family's going through. Look what this child's gone through. Yeah, I could throw some money in for that child to help the family. Because obviously I'm just one small person. What can you do in a war that needs billions and trillions of dollars? You're fighting against the second biggest superpower in the world, and you're a small country of 20-30 million people.
What you do is what you're doing. You find some people that you find some individuals and some families and find ways to make a difference, you know, in the lives that, that you're able to. So, yeah.
Sometimes it's a bit overwhelming because you just feel like, what am I doing? I'm just not getting enough done. And then other times you just have these absolutely brilliant moments of connection. It's just so strange. You know, there was a gentleman at the Superhumans that,
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Tell us a little bit about that. That was the discovery you made this year. Is this advanced prosthetics facility?
Yeah, I spent nearly a week there in total because, I'm not a New York Times journalist or Washington Post or big publication journalist. Obviously, I'm just a motorcycle riffraff, and I looked at some of the articles and I looked at what everyone was doing, and they're superhumans. They've got these great photos of these guys with their prosthesis and their stuff. And I thought,
yeah, we posted a few of those. He sent us. That's cool.
And I just kind of was like, let me just sort of spend some time with the boys and kind of get into them, you know? I think what I want to do when I go back is finish up just doing a lot of headshots and sort of upper body shots. I don't want to show the missing limbs. I want to show the vitality in these boys and their strength and their courage. And so I did get to spend a lot of time with a young lad that lost his leg, and he was so incredibly articulate to talk to me about the hell that war is, the smell, the sounds, the fear, the crying, the death, just even things like, emotionally dealing with the fact that the Russians don't remove their dead or wounded, and the dead, it's the summer, they start to smell, they have to deal with the smell of dead.
The Ukrainians pull back and bring back their bodies, but the Russians just leave theirs.
Yeah, they leave their soldiers on the field. They leave their wounded.
That's just weird. Oh gosh.
Yeah, I mean, Putin's just throwing thousands of young guys into the meat grinder, and they don't give a shit. And he talked about very articulately about the explosion that took his leg. One of the things, it's a big learning curve. What I didn't realize. When these men are injured with artillery, it's really not good for them because of the dirt, the grass, and the shit that gets into the
into their
devastation
wound.
Of their body. And then so they deal with a lot of blood disorders and sickness because
a lot of infection
dirt
and everything. Yeah,
they're really dealing with hyperinfection. And then for instance, the Tsar, he'd been injured in May. And I was with him last week, and I was with him the first day he got his prosthesis and walked. And it was just the most beautiful day. That this has been his goal since they drug him out of this trench, was to get back on 2 feet. And he had 17 surgeries. I mean, and no disrespect to the stories that are being done about the superhumans when they're on their prosthesis and what they're doing and going forward, but they've all had this incredibly long and arduous journey.
Just
the rehabilitation and surgeries and depression and coming to terms with losing limbs. And so that was something really special for me. And I'd started this conversation when you brought in the superhumans about a moment. Well, there was a big lad there, and he was kind of, I hope it's not disrespectful to say, he looked a bit like Shrek, who's kind of like big lumbering guy, and he was completely missing one arm. And we had, done the very sort of, formal handshake every day. And then finally, one day, I think I wrote on my phone, sorry, I don't speak Ukrainian, I made him a coffee. And got to tell you, Rob, he just looked at me with the warmest, gentlest, most amazing smile and handshake I think I've ever seen in my life. And I realized in that moment that we were connected. We don't have a common language. He doesn't speak English, I don't speak Ukrainian. And I just know I'm okay to be here. He told me so much in that moment. And, I've had just numerous moments like that with children and people in gas stations and ladies buying us coffee because we've come from America. And there's this dichotomy in my mind that I'm supposed to be here to tell really big stories and really powerful things, and the most impactful things personally to me are these small, well, these not small, I mean, these very, very significant moments when I feel like I connect with people.
These moments with individuals who are
exemplary
of, you know,
of what their people are living.
Yeah, there might each one of these stories, each one of these individuals, their story is a microcosm of their the people. World. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, and you know, when they find out you've come from America, they are so grateful. You know, I mean, I don't know what this country would do without America. I mean, the, you know, the support and the munitions and, but that, you know, but even that's just one part of it. You know, when you start burrowing into the aid organizations that are in here, the charitable people that are here, the volunteers that are here. I mean, this is a worldwide community of volunteers. I mean, Rotary immediately put together a $15 million emergency fund. They've got 1,500 Rotary members in here, 71 clubs. They're scattered all over Ukraine. They've got a, you know, in the beginning, it was just like Valhalla. Shit's exploding. Nobody knows what's going on. They're trying to get stuff across the borders. They're running to borders. And now this thing is like a well-oiled business machine where all of the medical supplies and stuff needed to come into Lviv. They get processed like at a depot that a guy called Boris runs. And then they get shipped on pallets to wherever they're going, to these other Rotary organizations around Ukraine. And they go with the postal service, who give them a great deal so they don't have to buy and maintain trucks and drivers. And they're putting money into the economy for the postal service. And all of these just tons and tons of supplies are making it all around Ukraine.
And they've just, you know, got, and man, it's just, they've got a just a well-oiled organization moving.
Yeah, and they just, I mean, these are brilliant men. This guy was in banking, international banking in Switzerland. I mean, you know, these are really top brain power humans that could be running big corporations. And they're using their talents to input and distribute the goods that are needed. And, you know, I spent some time, you would have enjoyed it. I went to a church that they're building in Irpin, and the pastor there, Serhii, I don't know if I had a chance to share anything with you, but
I think you did, know, a little bit, yeah.
He just, one day he said, well, you know, he's talking to his God, and off they go. We need meals. Now we need meals for subways. Now we need meals for 12 subways. Now we need sleeping bags. Now we need food. They ended up bringing in, he was telling a story about the 17th 20-ton food truck that came in from Czech. You know, like, I don't know how many more. Then they went into Bucha and Irpin. You know, this guy's stepping over dead bodies of civilians in the street. He's hearing stories of people starving because the Russians had occupied them and they didn't get food. It was one man starved so his wife could live. I mean, just on and on and on. And then he met an old babushka and her house was blown up and she was crying. So he said, I'll build you a house. And 450 modular homes later, they're still going. And now they're building a church, and they're building the church with a special floor that they can heat with wood heating during the winter if the electric grid goes down again, so that people can come, and they're buying mattresses so they can set up with this huge like dormitory area for people to be warm and housed and fed. That's, I mean, amazing. You know, you just stand there in the audience, and what was really cool about the story was he was speaking Ukrainian and then someone was translating. So I had time to really, you know, she was slow in English. I had time to really listen to what she said, make notes. And I was just like, you know, Rob, you just, some days you're like, what the fuck? You know, who are these humans? Where do they come from? You know, how, like, what drives them to just go from making a meal for a refugee to, or independent, you know, IDP, to truckloads of food and sleeping bags and homes and churches and, oh, just, yeah. So every day is just a, you know, some incredible, incredible story of human.
It's overwhelming endeavor. Just in a beautiful way, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, amen. So what how much longer are you going to be over there? Do you know, really?
No, I don't.
As long as you're able to, and yeah. What have you got coming up next in the next, you know, in the next few days? What's on target in the next couple of days for you?
Yeah, as you say, I started in Western Ukraine in Lviv with Andrei and Emil, my friends, and spent quite a lot of time at the Superhumanist Children's Hospital. My friend was with me for a few days. He left. I spent a lot of time with Andrei, just traveling, doing bits and pieces. Went into Kyiv. Didn't spend a lot of time in the city. I kind of spent time on the outskirts with a bike riding friend of mine, a guy called Igor. And I just kind of enmeshed myself in a Ukrainian family out in the forest. And, you know, they had friends over for a barbecue, went for bike rides. You know, we went to, had a day out to a canyon nearby. And of course, their reason being it was Independence Day and they wanted to be a long way out of the city because of missiles. Everybody was expecting big missile action on Independence Day, which actually didn't happen. And that's another really quite surprising thing is like when we were here at this actual hotel last year in Odessa, it was really, really haunting. They'd been struck right before we came in. Everything was boarded up. There was nobody on the streets. It was a curfew. There was nonstop sirens going off. The military checkpoints were really, really sketchy. I mean, they were looking at passports, our documents, our bike stuff, pulling our shit to bits. You know, soldiers with automatic weapons. No one was smiling. Everything was really tough. And
yeah,
I didn't actually get to have to show a passport or any ID at the military checkpoint until I got to Odessa. And the guys are smiling and taking a photograph of my paperwork. And it's a lot more, everything's a lot more relaxed this year. It almost seems a bit strange. I didn't realize how on high alert we were last year.
Right.
You know, how stressful it was. Everybody.
And how stressful it was on the Ukrainian people. The war was still new to them last year. You know?
Yes. Dig below the veneer and the calm and quiet exterior. Obviously, it's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of angst. But they definitely learned how to deal. What's interesting is I have an app on my phone. They know what type of missiles are coming through Telegram. They have an air alert. They go to Telegram, and then war bloggers will tell them, "Oh, okay, that's a MiG flying. Okay, if that thing lets its missile, there's no sense in looking for shelter. No one knows where it's going. Oh, that's this type of missile. That's a cruise missile. They know what's coming in from where.
Wow.
They know how long they've got to react. It's really interesting. And it's part of daily life. And it's like my son said, I was talking to Patrick, he goes, "Wow, Dad," he goes, "it's like having a weather app for missiles."
A weather app for missiles. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Leave it to Patrick. Right. But it is. I mean, what can you say? So yeah, they're just adapting.
They are. Well, we've only got just another minute or so left. Is there anything else you'd love just to share through Road Dirt at the moment?
No, just looking forward to getting back and seeing you guys, getting some adventures. You know, I'm obviously riding alone. I'm on a GS Trail 50 adventure, and the roads are really shitty here. But I got to tell you, it really is a great bike.
It's a phenomenal motorcycle. Yeah, one of my best friends. Really great. One of my best friends just bought a 2019 1250. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're going to be road tripping for both of our 60th birthday this next. So,
I think I might go to Ukraine for my birthday. How's that sound?
Yep. Well, Neil.
Well, Rob, listen. Thanks for the call. I mean,
thank you. Thanks for taking time out from your time over there to chat for a few minutes, man. It's great to see you, and you know, I'm glad you're doing well, and good Lord's using you over there to help people, and you're making a difference.
We're trying. Some days you just don't feel so good about it, and then other days, like, okay, I just got to keep swinging,
keep
doing what we can, you know?
Exactly.
All right, Robert.
Well, love you, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Yep, we'll talk again soon.
What a great conversation with our friend Neil over in Ukraine. And interesting to hear the progress, and good to hear some of the reconstruction that's taking place and the new friends he's made. Always sad and tragic to see the human collateral damage from conflicts near and far. And we wish Neil the best and safe travels, and his opportunity to care for and support and help meet the needs of others while he's over there. And if you'd like to help support his work in the Ukraine, as well as other places he has projects going around the world, wellspring-outreach.org. That's it right there. You can check him out on the web and help support his endeavors overseas and while he's in country right there as well. While you're out there, check us out as well. We've got quite a bit of content that we share to our online e-magazine, roaddirt.tv, to which Neil is one of our contributors. He's got a monthly column there called Neil Bailey Rides. And this one's for this month, we just published it, is real interesting. He, a number of years ago, had the opportunity to ride the 2005 MotoGP World Championship motorcycle that Valentino Rossi took to the top of the podiums that year. Neil had a chance to ride it, and he shares that experience in a story called A Moment of Weightlessness out there on roaddirt.tv. Check that out. It's quite a story. As well as the rest of our media, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Look for Road Dirt TV and join our social media community. And we have a YouTube channel called Road Dirt TV as well, Road Dirt TV. All the latest and greatest in motorcycle news, reviews, rallies, rides, racing, you name it, gear reviews, all that kind of stuff. Check it out there on Road Dirt TV, as well as a Spotify music playlist, about 25 hours worth of music out on Spotify, and it's called Road Dirt Classics. Again, if you enjoyed this, like, subscribe, leave a comment, share it around a little bit, and until next time, this is Rob with Road Dirt, wishing you a ride life.